Well, this is the third installment of Godly Communication, taking a look at the topic of Godly Communication. And you'll recall that first we began with taking a look at the basis for Godly Communication, rooted that in just basic creation realities as are revealed in Genesis 1 and 2. And after that, then jumped into Proverbs chapter 1 to begin to prepare ourselves for godly communication, recognizing that being prepared in this world is essential, can be so helpful. Why wouldn't we? And I thought there'd be no better place to do that preparation than to begin with the purpose statement and the motto that's given to us in Proverbs chapter 1 in the first 7 verses. The first 6 verses being that purpose given to us, and then verse 7 being the motto, operating as a gatekeeper that you must go through in order to live out all that follows in the book of Proverbs. And if you were here last time, or perhaps you weren't, you'll remember me saying that really the thought for not immediately jumping into godly communication, what that looks like, but preparing ourselves, preparing our hearts and minds, first of all, really arose out of an example that I had gleaned from our beloved pastor as he was telling me how he very intentionally seeks to be fully engaged in every conversation that he has here on Sundays. And he was informing me that that would be the model that I should also follow. And you yourselves know that you appreciate when people are fully engaged in conversations with you, when they're hearing what you're saying, when they're rightly interpreting, when you're arriving at the same meaning, when godly communication is operational and when sinfulness in communication is being set aside. And so in order to consider all of that, we must first begin preparing ourselves for that. And so we'll use the Proverbs. Now, you'll remember there's a need for thoughtful, for intentional preparation on our part in order to communicate. And so this preparation goes far beyond just having a simple intellectual knowledge about what communication is. Now, it goes way beyond that. It goes to recognizing experientially that you've seen examples, both good and bad, the good ones to follow, the bad to avoid, to put off. But then also, there's a spiritual component here as we desire to live in the fear of God and apply that relationship, really, even in our communication with others, that we would be thoughtful about this, that we would carefully think through how we go about interacting with others, communicating, whether that be verbally and writing, even non-verbally. And we'll take a look at all of those in the weeks to come. My intention is, after the short break next week, where we'll have an update on the church building project, that we would return the week after, and I think we'll start with listening. We'll start with the topic of listening and communication. That perhaps being the most difficult aspect of communication is to just simply give a listening ear to others so that you are hearing what they're saying. And so that's where we're heading. But for this morning, we'll just finish up these final verses, the verses that we started last week. You'll remember that the purpose of the Proverbs given to us is to provide the young and simple with the necessary knowledge and wisdom that they would need to live fearfully and successfully before God in this world. That would filter into every aspect of one's life. You'll also recall that a proverb literally means a comparison, and you can't help but when you read the Proverbs, you are comparing what you're reading to how you're living your life, to your attitudes, to your character, the qualities. And no doubt you've received correction from the Proverbs as you've read and said, that's me, but that doesn't cast me in a positive light. And so there's correction needed. And so there's plenty of advice, plenty of wise, sensible judgments really given to us as the sage proclaims these truths. And we also just briefly noted that the Proverbs really includes everything from just short, pithy statements, observations, tidbits of advice, admonitions, warnings, prohibitions, and so forth, right up to sermons. You could preach a full sermon, certainly, out of several of the sections in the Proverbs, where the thoughts seem to be much more interrelated, and there's a train of thought that carries through, even through lengthy portions of a chapter. We said that the Proverbs are thought-provoking, and that they really provide for us, as one commentator says, the keys for life are given to us in the Proverbs. And that we could, too, assess what we read here really with using one criterion. We'd have to ask ourselves, is it wisdom or is it folly? Is it foolishness? And so as we interact with the Proverbs, we ask ourselves, am I acting wisely? Or am I acting foolishly? Is this wisdom being put on display? Or is this foolishness that I am carrying out? And so they require our careful calculation. As we are comparing our lives to what we read, we need to be carefully calculating in order to really apply what we read here. And because they are so short and so pithy, it requires quite a bit of thought to think through, how am I going to implement this? How can I bring this about, live this truth out in my life? We also noted that the Proverbs are God-centered. And as I've already said, there's that gatekeeper text there in chapter 7, where the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in order to live this out, one must be in a right relationship with God, because it's the will of God that is displayed in this book. As we read through it, whether it be giving us advice or warnings and admonitions, this is in accordance with the will of God, and so we need to submit ourselves and subject ourselves to these texts. And so that's where we went last week. We also, and you'll note, you noticed last week if you were here, that I asked the same question after each verse that we covered. How does this particular verse, whichever verse that was, how does that verse apply to godly wisdom? How can it be applied to godly wisdom in our lives? And you'll recall that in verse 1, we noted that the Proverbs purposely provide the basis for recognizing and acknowledging what godly communication should look like. And that has come to us through observation, through reflection, as we've reflected back on things. And we've perhaps even lived out some of these Proverbs as we've been convicted by them. And not only that we then are able to distinguish that which would go against the will of God as well, as we're speaking with others specifically. And then we also noted that in order to rightly imitate what is described in the Proverbs, that right relationship with God would be vital. And how I communicate really is going to reflect that very relationship that I would have with God. And if I'm in right relationship with God and seeking to do his will, if he is doing that work that we heard of in this morning's sermon of progressive sanctification, then we are being conformed into the image of Christ, and we are that our speech, our our ability to communicate with others is going to reflect that. But it does require submission, not to our own standard, but to the standard set forth by God in His Word. And these Proverbs instruct, they discipline, they teach, they train. And in that kind of language, we also can recognize that there could be consequences that arise out of not following what's been taught, not doing as we've been trained to do. And so there can be both success leading to reward, or there would be retribution for rejecting the standard and going it our own way, communicating our own way. And in that, we would be outside of the will of God and in sin. And then we also saw in verse 1 how discernment really is what's causing one to be able to embrace the insight, the insightful sayings. And so that ability to recognize differences between what's true and what's almost true, to be able to discern, is really what then fuels the insight that we would have and the ability to embrace those insightful sayings, those wise sayings. And in verse 2, we said that we need to lay hold of instruction in wise behavior. This is our responsibility. And so this is on us, that we would, both in verse 2 and verse 3, that we would know, that we would discern, that we would receive. These are things that we are doing, that we are pursuing. And that as we gain insight, as we gain even a sort of cleverness, that we are able to comprehend the true nature of communication, no matter the circumstances, no matter the situations, no matter the conversations that we find ourselves in. And in turn, then respond ethically, that we would speak in a way that reflects righteousness, that we would speak in a way that reflects justice, that we would speak in a way that puts equity on full display, that there would be a fairness in our speech. And so that really is a review of the things that we talked about last week. We'll move on. So let's move on to verse 4. But why don't I read through our text here just to kind of kick us off here again. I'll start in verse 1 again. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is God's word. You know, something that I didn't say last time, but I'm just going to throw in here, is given that I'm like right at the end of preaching through the epistle to the Philippians, I've got one sermon left, and I've already been giving much thought to where do I go next the next time that I'm given the opportunity to step into the pulpit, and I've already decided that it's going to be the Proverbs. And so I'd like to go through at least the first 9 chapters. I don't know how long that would take. And then when I approach chapter 9, I think I'm going to take a deep breath and go, do I keep on the gas? Because it seems like that would be a massive task to work through to the end of it, just given all that is there. It's just so incredibly rich. But that's where I intend to go. And thankfully, because it allows me to brush up on my Hebrew as well. And so I've spent a lot of time in the Greek over the last few years since coming to Grace Life here. And this is going to help me to get grounded in my Hebrew again. So that's where I intend to go. Verse 4, to give prudence to the naive. to give prudence to the naive. Now, we need to notice that there are two shifts that occur here, two shifts that occur in between verse 3 and going into verse 4 now here. First of all, there's a shift in perspective. This shift in perspective is now away from the recipient of the proverb and to the teacher of the proverb, because it's the teacher of the proverb that is giving. And so let's just notice that. But then also let's notice the audience, where verses 2 and 3 were addressing a more general audience. Now we've got a very specific set of people in mind, so to speak. Those being described as naive and youthful. Naive and youthful. And no doubt if you've read through the Proverbs, you've noticed son type of language. We see that often, even in verse 8, hear my son, your father's instruction. Chapter 2 and verse 1, my son, will you receive my, if you receive my words, and so forth. And so I would believe that, I don't know why this happens. Forgive. All right, believe me, I'm trying. I had no coffee this morning. I've been drinking lots of water, and I've got a candy in my mouth, and it's still. So I don't know what's left. Maybe surgery, I don't know. Okay, so when the writer of Proverbs is addressing the son, certainly he's got a naivety in mind here. He's got a youthfulness in mind as he's addressing his son. And so here, he's addressing the naive. So let's first of all understand what this means. This person who is naive is described as being young, inexperienced, easily seduced, needing instruction, and yet at the same time capable of learning. Let's not overlook that fact. And so when instruction is given, it's given under the assumption that that instruction can be received. And so naivety is not necessarily a full-blown ignorance without any capability of learning. That's not what naivety is. It's just that there is an inexperience and there's a lot of room then for growth. And we see the naive person described in a number of places, even in the Proverbs here. In chapter 1 and verse 22, the naive person is described as one who loves being simple-minded. In verse 32 of chapter 1, we see that the naive is one who is under threat of a fatal waywardness and a destructive complacency. And then if you turn over to chapter 7 and verse 7, this young man, the son, is being warned of the deadly woman, and he's naive, and he's described as lacking sense. He's lacking sensibility. In chapter 14 and verse 15, there is a description of the naive one believing everything. He believes everything. And so being naive would cause one to be tossed to and fro by every wind and wave. There's a lack of noble-mindedness. Maybe there's an open-mindedness that is the result of one's inexperience. In chapter 14, and again just a little bit further, in verse 18, there's a warning there that the naive one will inherit foolishness. And so there's a dangerous and precarious position that the naive one is in, where there can certainly be room for growth and improvement and even making right choices and being able to learn what would be right. But at the same time, that person can go in the opposite direction and inherit full-blown foolishness. Now, we read about this in chapter 19 and verse 25. Chapter 19 and verse 25, where we read, "Strike a scoffer and the naive may become shrewd, but reprove one who has understanding and he will gain knowledge." There's a negative connotation here to the naive one being described in verse 25. And that term there, the naive may become shrewd, that word shrewd is the same word that's used to describe the serpent in the garden. And so what can we glean from verse 25 here? Well, this naive one, if the naive one goes in a negative direction, that shrewdness is only going to bring about a deceptive character in them, that they would actually foster and work on that. That they become sensible to deception rather than to righteousness. And so this describes the naive one. Yet, on the other hand, in chapter 21 and verse 11, in 21:11, here again we read of the naive one, when the scoffer is punished, the naive becomes wise. And so there's a teachability there. And so that naive one does not have to remain in that position of scoffing, but that he would become wise. But when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. And so he can take on knowledge. And yet, let's then, knowing that it can go in one of two directions. If a person is naive, there are two directions that one could possibly go in. Let's then realize and admit that critical juncture that is present when one is naive. In chapter 22 and verse 3, 22:3, we read, "The prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it." And so, powerful warning. And again, in chapter 27, we see the naive, chapter 27 and verse 12, the naive proceed and pay the penalty, whereas the prudent man sees evil and hides himself. And so this is a critical juncture that we recognize when the naive is being addressed. And notice we said that the focus here is on the teacher really then, because we see this verbiage here, to give prudence, to give sensibility to the naive. And so there's a granting, a yielding of produce, a process that's being set in motion whereby sensibilities are being transferred over to the naive, to purposefully grant the proverbs into the naive one's heart and mind that would then result in being able to live this out, to live out a life that displays sensibility. And so this is vital. Now we should also then go, so for who is this? For who is this? We said it's for the naive, but then let's also understand who is the one that is giving. And we see the one that is giving in chapter 2 and verse 6. Chapter 2 and verse 6, we read, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding." And so the one giving prudence to the naive is the Lord, is Yahweh. And let's just note here that in the Proverbs, the covenant name of God is used. And so you see that in the NASB in all caps, Lord. In the LSB, you'll note that they've switched back to using the word, the name Yahweh. And this referring to the covenant name of God. And this covenant name really implicates his loving kindness, his loyal love, his faithfulness, his enduring faithfulness, and no doubt his eternality. And when I think of how the covenant name of God is used in the Old Testament, I see, you know, the Lord Yahweh introducing himself to the, through the generations. He is the faithful God of Israel who has introduced himself to Abram, to Isaac, to Jacob. And so he is the eternal covenant-keeping God. He is the eternal God of loving kindness. And he is the one that is giving prudence to the naive through the Proverbs. But then let's also understand what prudence is. Prudence is the opposite of naivety, really. And so what's being built into the naive one here is exactly what that naive one needs. It's sensibility to take him out of that simple-mindedness, to take him out of his ignorance and his inexperience, to give him an ability to reason rightly with a fear of God in view, that he wouldn't be one that would be rushing into things willy-nilly, speaking before thinking. No, rather that he'd be able to navigate through life more carefully, more considerately. Even that this naive one would be able to plan ahead for conversations that he is anticipating. And so sensibility is given. Now this term sensibility, I think we need to understand that there are terms here in these opening verses that cannot be divorced from one another. In fact, they're found together continually. And those terms being wisdom and knowledge and instruction and discretion. And so, as we consider this, the prudence that's being given, we need to understand that to have prudence, to understand prudence is to understand wisdom, is to have wisdom. And that this is an ability that can be given. And so to give prudence to the naive, but then also to the youth, knowledge and discretion. And so there's a parallel thought that is being delivered here. The youth here is referring to one who is an adolescent or even a young yet unmarried man, and one who is less mature. And there's an age range that is displayed in the scriptures when this term is used. This term is used in Exodus 2 to refer to the infants in Israel as they're in captivity in Egypt. But then this term is also used in Genesis 41 to describe one who is 30 years old. And so there's quite the range in terms of what the youth, the young man, is. He is one lacking in experience, and thus he too is naive of things, certainly. And we can build our understanding further of the youth, of the young man, by just simply taking a look at some of the Proverbs again. And you don't have to turn there, but in Proverbs 20 and verse 11, this young man is recognizable by the deeds that he does. That's how you can distinguish the young man from another. And we see that as he's lacking in sensibility, as he's lacking prudence, that it's demonstrated even through his deeds. But then, as we've already seen also in chapter 7 and verse 7, the young man, the youth, is also described as lacking sense. He's among the naive, but singled out as one who is lacking sense. It could be worse. He could be hostile. He could be a mocker, one who scorns. But that's not what's described there. He's just simply a man who is lacking sensibility. We see the young man described or made mention of in chapter 22, where we read this familiar text, train up a child. This is train up a youth in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. And so this characterizes how the young man, the youth, the child even, is to be trained up. And that there would be a result then, that he too is teachable. The foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. The rod of reproof, give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. And so in each of these texts, the youth is being described. Now, how in the world does that apply to communication, and more specifically, godly communication? Well, I can only speak for myself and say that I've had my mouth washed out with soap at least a few times. And while it wasn't maybe the rod of discipline, it was the rod of discipline. And so I was certainly trained how to use my words, how to choose words, how to speak, the type of tone that I use. We do this all the time. And so we train up the young man. And we can go certainly beyond childhood when there's an admonition or a reproof given to somebody based on the way they have spoken to us or to others. We can reprove in that moment. And thereby, we're trying to train up that young, that less mature person to a place where they can speak in a godly manner. And so, certainly, this happens, to be able to speak in a manner that would be characteristic of godly communication rather than characteristic of the naive youth. And that knowledge to the youth, knowledge and discretion, again, that knowledge that we spoke of last week was that experiential, observational, reflective type of knowledge that is gained by experience, where we can acknowledge and where we can recognize the way we ought to speak. And so the youth is able to gain that knowledge, to have that knowledge given to them, but also then discretion as well. And this discretion then is to be able to think, to plan, to purpose, to devise, to really think through how one is going to walk in a constructive way while avoiding giving into temptation, how I'm going to really commit myself to constructive communication, avoid anything that would be destructive, that would prevent that would prevent godliness within communication. And so discretion is vital as well. Discretion in chapter 2 and verse 11 is said to guard you. Discretion will guard you. Understanding will watch over you. It's really this discretion that imparts the ability to walk the path of life in a constructive way, so that you can ably plan and purpose, think through to make these choices in the direction that you would go. And again, in chapter 8 and verse 12, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. And so here again, we see that these are inseparable from wisdom, whether it be prudence, knowledge, discretion. These are linked closely to wisdom. Any thoughts on verse 4? To give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion, directly as it relates to to how we communicate. Nav. Yeah.
Is this him?
So this is Solomon writing. Is he writing when he writes to his son? Does he have Rehoboam in mind? You know, based on our knowledge of him rejecting the elders that served under Solomon, rejecting their counsel, accepting the counsel of friends, basically, together with all of the other things that he does as he's leading Israel. I think we have to remember that Solomon has passed away. And so if he's writing to his son, he's projecting forward. Does he have that son particularly in mind? I can't say. I don't think necessarily so. But these are Proverbs pithy statements that are, you know, that arise out of the wisdom that God has specially given to who would be the wisest man on the planet, you know, at the time and since. And so I'm leaning towards no. It's not directly, you know, focusing on Rehoboam. But certainly, I would say arising out of Solomon's life experience, even as we read through the Proverbs, we see that he has not heeded his own counsel, really. His life did not, he was led away, essentially, by all kinds of women from pagan nations. So, any other thoughts? Specifically in terms of, or relating to, how we apply this to our speech, to our communication, to listen, to speak. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, certainly. And so it's reflected in young children, certainly, that there's a training that's involved, and it's not necessary because they don't have the restraint. They just say what's on their mind, what's in their heart. It just comes out unfiltered. But I would say the same can happen with the older youth as well, you know, where I recall someone who used to like to use this as a preface to a conversation. I need to be honest with you. What comes after that can be quite devastating. And so choosing words carefully, sometimes it's not good to be honest with a person in those terms, right? You need to carefully choose your words. Very quickly can be that honesty is actually just a guise for judgment. And we need to be awfully careful with that. And so choosing our words, thinking through conversations that we know that we need to have, and let's confess that at times there can be we can play the part of the naive, that we can play the part of the youth. Let's not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to. But rather, let's walk through this life carefully, prudently, thinking, you know, using discretion, planning ahead. To the immature, knowledge and the ability to think ahead about communicating is vital. Choosing our words and our responses carefully, or even choosing to remain silent, is a way to not give into temptation in the moment. the temptation to do otherwise, the temptation that would then lead to sin, that would lead to a communication, a conversation not going as it otherwise should have. And so I think there's great encouragement to be gleaned from verse 4. I think we should be encouraged that the naive one doesn't have to stay there, doesn't remain there, that the youth doesn't remain there, stay there in that less mature predicament, but that wisdom can grow the naive, that prudence, knowledge, and discretion can be given, are given to them. And so we can be thankful, certainly, for this verse. Let's consider verse 5. Now, here again, there's a shift that occurs. We've just been noticing the naive, the youth, but now a wise man is being is being referred to. A wise man will hear and increase learning. And so this wise man is described in one lexicon as being one who is pious, one who is wise, who knows and observes the law specifically. And so when we think about hearing, we're thinking about hearing in really two ways here, that yes, there's a landing on the ear of some instruction, but that it just doesn't remain just something that's landed on the ear but not responded to. If the wise man will hear, that means that the wise man is also going to obey. And so there's an aspect of obedience that is being displayed here. And we need to notice that. This word will listen is the same word that is used in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 4. And it's often referred to as the Shema because that is the Hebrew word for listen or hear. Hear, O Israel. Right? And so the wise man is the one that... I think it's good now. I think I can make it to the end. So it's the wise man that is the subject that is able to do this action. He will not only receive the instruction, but that he will also obey. But there's something else that we need to notice here, and that is that in the Hebrew, and you wouldn't see that here, but let me tell you, in the Hebrew, this is given in the imperfect. What does that mean? Well, it means that what's being described here isn't whole or complete as of yet, but that there's a movement, a forward movement that is being described here. And so this wise man will continually be hearing. He will not stop this. It's not that he has arrived in some way, but rather that this would be the continual attitude of the wise man. He hears, and those things that land on his ears then are really bringing out an obedience. And so both the internal nature and the external are reflected here. Externally, he's taking the words, the instructions to heart. Internally, he is going to obey them. There's a sense of his internal reality that is being given here. And that would then lead to an increase in learning. And we need to, again, give credit where credit is due. We said that this book is God-centered. And we read that in chapter 20 and verse 12, specifically with use of this word here. Notice what is given to us there. We read, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord, Yahweh, has made both of them. And so we need to give credit where credit is due. The ability for the wise man to hear is of the Lord. It's given to him. And we can be very thankful for that. We also know that to listen is commanded. Again, we see this in verse 8 of chapter 1. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. And so there's a command that's being given to the son to listen, to hear. Again, in chapter 4 and verse 1, hear, O sons, the instruction of a father. And so let's understand that just as this ability to hear is given by God, at the same time, there is an obligation on the part of the son, on the part of the wise man, to hear. And so this is being commanded. But then we see many results that come from listening. In chapter 15 and verse 32, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding. And so this has results. There's an acquisition of understanding that comes from hearing. Again, in chapter 18 and verse 13, we read, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. Oh, hang on here. Rather, let's go to, yeah. So a negative, you know, a negative response here where the person hears, but then is really not hearing, right? Something is told to him, but he's not responding the right way. He's not actually listening because he's given an answer before he's actually even willing to hear. Let's go to chapter 19 and verse 20. And there we see that this hearing, that you may be wise the rest of your days. This is, again, the result of listening, of hearing. In chapter 19 and verse 27, where we're warned, cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. And so not only can it result in the acquisition of understanding, but to not listen, to not obey even the command to listen, results in the son then straying from the words of knowledge. He goes away from them. And if he goes away from them, then how in the world could he possibly apply that? He can't. But there are also promises that accompany hearing, promises that accompany listening. And let me just give these to you in a shotgun blast here. In chapter 1 and verse 33, we see that listening results in living securely. It results in being at ease from the dread of evil. In chapter 4 and verse 10, we see that hearing or listening results in the years of your life being many. We see in chapter 8 and verse 32 that the one who hears, they're blessed. They are blessed who keep my ways. But then oppositely in chapter 13, the scoffer does not listen, does not hear rebuke. The poor hears no rebuke in verse 8. And so this is the result of not listening. In fact, those ears are closed and they're unable, incapable of obedience then. He whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Another promise given in 15 and verse 31. And so this is what is promised. And not only that then, but then also understanding, that there would be an increase in learning, an increase in insight, in knowledge, a further development of that to use that skillfully. And all of this really laid out in this opening part of the verse, a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. Now, in the Hebrew here, this is in the passive, and that's important to see as well, that this man of understanding is acquiring because it's being given to him to acquire. And so he's on the receiving end of the action. The man of understanding is receiving this. He's been given the ability to discern. He's been given intelligence, discretion, an ability to have understanding. And this, again, opposite of those who are described as fools and scoffers in several of the texts. To acquire is to gain, to obtain. And this, again, is given, though, in the imperfect. And so there's a movement, a direction. This is an incomplete action. This is not that a person arrives, you know, that I've acquired all the knowledge that I possibly could, and there's nothing more to take in. That's not the case here at all, but that this is a life of learning. The wise man is going through life learning as he goes, and that is ongoing. And this wise counsel is providing guidance, sometimes rendered as guidance in other of the Proverbs. And so, how do we apply this to godly communication? How can we take a wise man will hear an increase in learning and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel? How can we apply this to our communication? That displays wisdom if you're willing to receive that counsel, if you're willing to receive correction and hear, but not only hear, to be responsive to that, to put that in motion then, to obey the counsel that one's received, specifically with the way we communicate, then it displays wisdom. It displays wisdom on our part. To understand a proverb, a figure, words of the wise and their riddles. And so here, the writer is really emphasizing the need to understand words, to listen carefully, to read carefully, to understand the economy of words, their meaning, to understand what is being communicated, to even diligently study those to experience them in order to glean insight. And so there are four different words here used to describe different writings, a proverb, a figure, words of the wise, their riddles, and each one just helping us to better understand what it is that we all need to be taking into consideration. The proverb, as we've already said, is a comparison. So these statements that we use to really judge ourselves, our lives, our actions in the moment. A figure is referring to something that's maybe a little more elusive, an illusion, a parable, a satire, a poem that is mocking, something that's maybe a little more difficult because there's figurative language that's being used, and so some processing needs to occur. And we see this in Habakkuk 2 and verse 6, where we read, "Will not all of these take up a taunt song against him, even mockery and insinuations against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his for how long and makes himself rich with loans." And so there's something that's being exaggerated here. There's a criticism being leveled here by the writer. And this is, he's using a figure. He's using mockery, satire. To point out a ridiculous situation, to even level some ridicule. And so we need to understand not only a proverb, something that's given maybe a little more straightforward, but a figure as well. And so it requires us to employ wisdom again, even as we're communicating with people that may be speaking in a way that is not immediately clear. And we might want to avoid speaking in that same way, unless it's necessary. I'm not saying that it might not be necessary to speak in a way that actually might ridicule a person in a moment just to point out something that is really ridiculous. There could be correction in that. So to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. And then finally, we get to the motto, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And I'm certain that as we go through the remainder of our study in godly communication, that time and time again, we'll find ourselves back at this key idea here, that the fear of the Lord is going to be reflected in the way we speak, in the way we communicate. And as I was thinking on this verse and seeing the second part of it, fools despise wisdom and instruction, I've been thinking about some of the communication that's been put out there even this week as the government has legislated things that just simply are not, they're talking about legislating things that just simply are not true at their very basis. And so to not allow transgender operations until the age of 17, really what it should say is that they're not allowed in this province, full stop. And to speak in any other way is the fool that is despising wisdom and instruction because it goes against biblical truth. And in that communication, you see that. But then on the other side of it, you also see the response to it is also equally as foolish. And so we need to have the ability to hear what is being communicated to us, to listen carefully for truth. And I mean, I've used something that's obviously not truthful, but sometimes it won't be that easy to spot. And we want to speak in all of our communications in a way that is honoring to God, in a way that displays that we fear the Lord. And that is just the very starting point of being able to exercise knowledge and wisdom. Let's pray. Father, this is our desire, that we would communicate in a godly manner. And we're thankful for really this groundwork that has been laid here, that we can prepare, that we can move forward from this point, and we can be thinking clearly and strive to think clearly about how we would enter into conversations, how we would communicate with one another, and do so in a way that is honoring to you, in a way that displays that you have given to us knowledge, that you have given to us understanding, that you've given to us discretion, that we are able to demonstrate the wisdom that can only come from above as we interact with others. And so give us that ability, not only in some of the conversations that might go a little easier, but also in difficult conversations, Father, in our most intimate relationships, in our homes. Sometimes we take communication for granted. And I pray, Lord God, that we would consider the knowledge, understanding, discretion, and wisdom that you give in order that we can communicate in a manner that is pleasing to you. And so bless the rest of this day, we ask. In Christ's name, amen.